This is an interview conducted for the Western Sydney Women's Oral History Project, From Farms to Freeways, Women's Memories of Western Sydney. This is interview number one with Mrs. Marge Heath of Chain of Ponds Road, Mulgoa, taken on Wednesday, the 28th of August, 1991.
We're on air. My name is Marjorie Irene Heath. I live at Lot 7, Chain of Ponds Road, Mulgoa, and I was born on the 28th of January 1926 in Sydney. That's all I can, I'm not sure what suburb. I'm married, and I've left, I'm Australian born. I might have got this out of context here, doesn't matter. And I have three children. And I've been roughly 17 years in this area.
Fine. So that's in the Blacktown area.
Do you want to add? Yeah, well, Blacktown, 17 years in Mulgoa. Before that, we were in Lane Cove for 2.5 years, and before that, in the Blacktown area for 18 years. And before that, Vaucluse, so many years. And before that, Bronte. That's where we were when we were married, Bronte in Bondi Junction.
Right. Yeah. So when did you first live in the Blacktown area?
At 17 years of age.
And then you came back.
Oh yes, that was for about 3 years, from roughly 1942 to the end of 44 when my brother got married. Then we went back to Vaucluse after that, and then I got married and we lived at Bondi Junction for about 3 months, then Bronte for 6-7 years, and then in 1954 we went to Blacktown on a poultry farm.
What made you come all the way back to Blacktown?
Well, my brother had a poultry farm and he talked my brother into going on the farm because birds in cages for poultry farming had just really started. Instead of being on the ground and in sheds, it became intensive farming in sheds, in layers were put into cages. And my brother was one of the first to do that in, I suppose, Australia, let alone New South Wales, but I would say Australia. And he talked John, that's my husband, into going into poultry farming. And that's how we started. We went and looked for land, and we went to Castle Hill, a few places. John did more looking than I did, of course, because he was the one that was... But in the end, we settled on Blacktown because my brother was there and we thought we'd need help as regards how to... we needed all the help we could get into something my husband had never done before. He was insurance, so it was a total change for him to go into poultry farming.
And so what sort of acreage did you buy?
Well, we bought, first of all, 10 acres. From a lady down the street on the old Western Highway, what is the old Western Highway today, near Prospect Reservoir. Mm-hmm. And the lady we bought the land from was a Mrs. Honeyman. She had a tea rooms, which were a great thing in those days for people out on a country drive. They'd go and have a cup of tea. Well, she owned our 10 acres, and we bought that from her. And I'm trying to think... how much it was per acre. It was ridiculously dear by today's standards. I'd have to ask my husband on that. Mm-hmm. About $1,800, I think. Well, no, it must have been pounds in those days. But I can check that for you if you want it, because he's pretty good on that. But on my memory, it was ridiculously cheap on today's. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got into poultry farming. And
you had to build your house
there. Oh, yes, we had to build it. And that was another... in those days, it still wasn't easy to do building because there wasn't the amount of materials about that there is today. And my father had done a bit of building and he built our house where we lived at Vaucluse. So he knew a very good carpenter, and he went and lived up there with my husband while they built the house and the farm. They batched there with not very good conditions, you know. They'd have to have a shower under a hose and all that in a little... It was roughing it. And I stayed till our house at Bronte was sold. And then I moved from there and went to into a little cottage my brother owned on Blacktown Road until our place was finished. And then we moved into our house. And it was a nice home. It was a weatherboard. It was fairly big. It was about 14 squares. Nice big kitchen. You want all this information? Big kitchen. Nice family room, a nice lounge room, three big bedrooms. It was a nice home.
Indoor bathroom?
Oh, of course, yes, an indoor bathroom. But at that time, you see, being a weatherboard house, it wasn't easy to... They hadn't perfected, I don't think, putting tiles up in... So I had, a dreadful thing, a Tilex sort of thing. Like, it was a really fancy... fibro sort of thing that they put panels in the shower. Later on I put Laminex over it to make it easier to clean, and then eventually I had the shower retiled. So in those days there wasn't the pick of the materials that you've got today, but nevertheless it was a nice home.
And this would have actually been 1954
when we moved in. It took a while after the war to get to the stage where we had a lot of things were pretty basic. There wasn't, you go in a shop today and you can get so many different sorts of building materials, but not then. It was basic brick veneer. No, there weren't really many brick veneers. They were mainly timber houses out. My brother had built a timber house on his farm when he moved from the one that he originally had at Blacktown. And he built just before we did at Prospect there. And his house was timber, very nice. But it was they were really fundamental when you think of today with the diversity of all the building materials that you've got.
And did you have neighbours right next door?
No, not straight away. There was a neighbour up the road... I've got to think now how many metres it would be away. About 200, 300, 400 metres, I suppose. See, having 10 acres, and then beside us there was a 5 acres, and a man eventually went there and moved a Nissan, like one of those army huts, and he lived in that and converted that to what they wanted to live in, and then he put turkeys in. And then the one on the other side was built there, and eventually our neighbours there were Yugoslavs, and we've remained friends with them ever since. We ended up buying the next 5 acres sometime after this other man, well, he was Greek, the one that had the turkeys. Can you follow all this, Robin? Yes. He was Greek, one was Greek and one was Romanian, he and the wife. I can't tell you which one. But they sold to us. They wanted to sell and we wanted to buy. So we bought their place. So
with they were people who'd come.
Yes, after us, yes. But on the other side of him, where the Yugoslavs, that place was there. And he came down one night and wanted to get from us poultry manure because they had a market garden. They grew tomatoes mainly, so at that time we were chased for the poultry manure because there were a lot of market gardeners in the area and the poultry manure was in demand, so sometimes we were fighting them off. But towards the end of our time there, with subdivisions taking up all the market gardening, our manure was wanted less and less. See, with urbanisation creeping in towards the end of that 18 years, we had trouble getting the people to come and take the manure. It was a problem after a while, towards the end. So The writing was on the wall that Blacktown was becoming an urban area. And it gathered momentum towards that last 18 part of the book.
So in the house, what sort of electrical appliances did you have when you first set up house there?
Well, an electric stove, a hot water service. I suppose, from memory, we had an electric heater, and then my husband took a liking to those kerosene heaters, so the electric heater didn't really get that much work. We had the telephone, that's not electric, but I'm trying to tell you what we did have. What else would there be? An electric light, of course. Most modern things that you would want in a home. That
hot water jugs, vacuum cleaners.
Oh, yes. All that, yes.
Food mixers.
No. Oh, yes, I think, somewhere in that time I got a Sunbeam Mixmaster, but that was towards the end of the 18 years I got that, but they had them then, but I'm not really into making that cakes. I'm not a cake maker, so that really never worried. We had a toaster, all the general things that you would have, that a normal house would have. So from that point of view, yes, well set up.
And did you have the sewer connected?
No, we had a septic, what they call a septic tank.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Because some of the properties had sanitary services called.
Oh, where we were. Oh, no, no, no. We went straight in with a septic. Mm-hmm. We never had a sanitary. I know they did have them, and they still had them then at that time, but we didn't. We had a septic tank, so we never had that problem.
And did you have a garden around your house, or I suppose you were too busy with the poultry?
Oh, no, we had a garden, mm-hmm. and eventually we had a gardener that used to come and do the mowing and a bit of digging around garden beds and things. He would come once a week for a couple of hours, and of course John never had time. Well, he was very busy on the farm. It was a busy farm. We had a lot of birds. When we finished, I think we had 22,000 birds, 22,000 layers. It was a big farm.
And did you sell the eggs mostly to the city?
Mostly to the egg board. In those days, the egg board controlled most of the market. So you had to really have a license to sell. Eventually, we got the license and sold from the farm. People would come for their fresh eggs to the farm. And eventually we killed poultry. We had a processing works as well there. Mm. And people would come for poultry. And then we opened a couple of shops for the poultry and the eggs in Parramatta, in Darcy Street.
Oh.
So we had a shop there and that sold our produce. So.
And so were you very much involved in the farm yourself?
Or? No, not really, no. Only if on a poultry farm, poultry is very much affected by heat waves. You can lose your whole flock. And Blacktown used to get very hot. We had record temperatures in the summer of 100 degrees. And those days you would have to, well, the sheds had sprinklers on them that cooled the roofs. But the birds on the end of a cage, on the end of a shed, in cages at the end of a shed where they would get the western sun, would be very stressed. So my husband would really have to go around and water them by hose to keep them cool, actually wet them, because on a hot westerly wind, those birds, and if a bird, not only do they can die with the extreme heat, if they don't die and they survive it, they go off the lay. It affects their egg production. So it was important. Seeing your life, your livelihood is dependent on those birds, they're the first thing you worry about. And that everybody on a hot day, and you can get a heat wave with 3 or 4 days, would be out there looking after the birds. Even the egg collecting might even have to wait. So the egg packing was another thing that had to wait during a heat wave. So often the staff would be hosing, and only the things to keep those birds alive would only be done. So egg packing could be done at night when it was cool, so sometimes if my husband was there packing, I'd go over and help him. But they were very rare. Me helping was a rare thing. I didn't have to do it. But the odd occasion when we'd really... You see, in summer, if you get 4 or 5 days, the birds get very distressed with the heat. You've really got to, in the morning, be over there watching them. And the sprinklers on the roof just weren't enough. So they were really hard times for my husband. And he used to get very tired. You can imagine 104 degrees, and the temperature doesn't drop very much at night when you get a heat wave. So he was always, he hated the summer.
So your role would have been a more supportive role then, I guess.
Oh, yes,
keeping the home fires running.
Well, yes, but I saw a lot of my husband because he'd be over for morning tea, he'd be over for lunch, he'd be over for afternoon tea. You really have to get on well. When I've heard people say they dread their husband retiring, I've never had that problem because I've always had him.
Yeah.
So we haven't had to make an adjustment.
Mm.
Yeah, you've really got to be good friends.
You saw a lot of each other that way. Yeah.
Yes, good friends, yes. From that point of view, I should have done more to help, I suppose, but he had a staff. But they would be the only times when he'd really get behind with the egg packing. And in the end, though, we had a lady that packed the eggs, but and they brought out a machine that made it easier to grade the eggs, you see. As time went along, different, what would you call it, inventions, I suppose, came along that really helped poultry farmers. And in the end, our farm became old-fashioned in comparison with all the latest trends with the poultry industry. With I don't know exactly what they were. I think there were things that would collect the eggs for you, and it was less labour intensive. So in the end, we really were forced either to really modernise our farm or go. And we were already by that time. In 1969 or 70, the government brought out the regional plan of Sydney to the year 2000, and we, in our area where we lived, it was zoned as a proposed open space. And on top of that, the new Western Freeway was to cut into the corner of our property.
Mm.
So we had to battle with the... was then the state, and the freeway, the DMR handed over to the State Planning Authority, it was then, it's the Department of Planning today, but in those days it was the State Planning Authority, SPA. The control, I suppose, of our land, it all reverted then to the State Planning Authority from the DMR to them. We were fighting with the DMR to get compensation for what they were going to take, but in the end it was the State Planning Authority. So we tried to sell our farm, and because it was proposed open space, no one wanted to buy it. So we said to them, well, you're the only buyers and you want it, you've got to make up your mind now, and they bought it.
Mm.
Oh, it was a battle, and the people, in the meantime, we'd had another farm start up beside us on the other boundary to the north, and they were in the same boat. So they bought both of our farms. And then they ended up buying the market garden that was further up, the Yugoslav people. And gradually, I think, I don't know how much, what they've done with the rest of the land in that area, whether they've still kept buying it or whether the people are, I don't really know, but I know they bought us. And
so urbanisation really did push you out.
Oh yeah, well, apart, as I said to you, there weren't the market gardeners about to take that. The poultry manure did become a problem, and even our neighbour Mrs Honeyman that ran the tea room, she complained about it brought flies.
Mm.
You've got no idea what the flies were like in the summer. They were on the door black, and you'd have to wave the door backwards and get And on the eaves of the house, they would be black at night. They'd all settle there to rest for the night, and I'd go out and spray then. No, they really were a dreadful problem, flies. Not so much in the extreme heat of summer, in autumn and spring, they were just dreadful. You've got no idea. I was perpetually spraying inside, because no matter how carefully you open a door to go in, if they're thick on that door, they come in on your back, everywhere. So, in fact, my father, he laughed when I think about him. He said to me one day, he said, "Do you reckon all these flies in here?" He said, "Or do you reckon some of them came in pregnant?" But they were a problem. So.
And you raised your children there on the farm too? Yes. Were they born while you were living
there? No, one was, the last one. I was living there when he was born. The first one was born in 1950. And then the second one, 52, and then the third one was born in 1964. And I was living there in 1964 when he was born. So I had him at because my doctor was in the city, and he went to Crown Street Hospital, that's where he was born.
There were local hospitals, I suppose.
By that time, there was. We had Blacktown Hospital by the time he was born. I'm just trying to think. I can't give you the date, the Blacktown Hospital. It's a fair while ago that it was built. It was built in Blacktown Road. As regards, look, I couldn't tell you whether there were any private. I'm trying to think. No, I can't even think of any private hospitals. I suppose there were, but see, I got sick when I was on the farm before my son, the third one, was born. I hemorrhaged from the lung, and fortunately we were very, very friendly with our family doctor. Now, he was Polish, and his practice was at Doonside, but we knew him socially. He was a friend as well as our doctor, and of course John called him over. Going to bed, I started to cough up, it was tremendous. So he came, and he put me into... the next day, he said, "Look, I don't know what's causing it. Well, how could you tell?" So, into RPA, and I had a specialist there. So I really haven't been in a hospital in Blacktown, not locally. It wasn't all that cut off towards the end. Like, as you say, the urbanisation really had started when my youngest son was born. Yeah. So when he started school from there, he started at the same school the two elder ones had gone to. But we had trouble with one of the children in his class was a bully, and I went looking for another school, and I found a little a Christian school, Tyndale. It was run by the Dutch Reformed Church, it was Dutch origin. So
where was that?
That was in Blacktown in Kildare Street. So it meant I had to take him in each day, but at least we got peace. He didn't want to go to school. It was became direct. And when I went to the teacher, she said, "Why didn't you tell me?" And I said, "Well, I had told her once," but.
Which school was this?
They called it Central, Blacktown Central School, and they're going to take it away now, I believe. It's going to, I think it's finished. It's right in the middle of Blacktown in Flashcombe Road, right...
near the post office?
Yes, just up from, just up from the post office. That's where they went, and... Lance would have gone there, but only for it might have been a couple of months, but I couldn't stand it any longer, and so I looked around, found this other little school. But I think by then too, my sister came to live in Blacktown, and her children by that, see her children, she's 9 years younger than I am, so her children are younger than mine, and by the time she was lived in a street off Flashcombe Road, on the southern end of Flashcombe Road. I wonder what the noise was. So her children went to a school in Flashcombe Road, and it was Blacktown.
So did when with the two younger children, how did they get to school? Did
the older ones?
The older ones.
First of all, there was no bus. And the street that we lived on, the old Western Highway, but on the corner of Reservoir Road. And at that stage when we moved in, it was a dreadful gravel road. And every time it rained, there was always problems. So my brother went into the council and they would grade it periodically. And the next thing, we had it tar sealed. And my children used to be carried to school. My brother's wife or he or I would take it in turns to take them in backwards and forwards to school, because my children were very similar in age to my brother's children. So between all of us, we would take them backwards and forwards. But eventually a bus service started. Now I see it's hard to remember exactly how long after we were there that bus service started.
You drove them by car, did you?
Yes. See, either my brother would come and pick up, because we were so close, we're all in a little corner there together. Not my sister, she was further away, but my brother and I, we took it in turns, actually, so that you weren't out every day. One might do it in the morning, one might do it in the afternoon, instead of twice a day. Or in the end, we work together. So that if you wanted to go out for the day, you wouldn't have to be running backwards and forwards for these children. And, of course, I never had to worry about anybody being at home if they came home and I wasn't there. Their father was always there.
So, from
that point of view, yes.
And so you didn't have to depend on anyone really for after-school childcare or anything
They had plenty of places to play and they were pretty good kids. They weren't any problems. So if I didn't happen to be there, their father was always there. So from that point of view, it was good. And, of course, after Wilma, the Dutch lady, started for me, she was so wonderful, I could say to her, will you keep an eye on Lance, then, you see, and she would watch him while if I had to do anything in Blacktown or anything.
And what did any of your children go on to education, tertiary education, or after school?
Stephen, that's the eldest, he became a school teacher, and he studied for that at Wagga.
Wagga Teachers
College. Whatever that was then. Was it called Wagga? Well, anyhow, down in Wagga, that teacher's college. Then he went back to night school. See, he was only 2-year trained, so then he had to go to get his third year. He had to do that as a part-time student.
There was nothing in this area then, of course.
No, I'm trying to think, Robin, whether there were any other. Yes, I think Armidale he could have gone to, but for some reason, Wagga was the one that he ended up at. And then to do, but he didn't get his third year till he got married. I think he realised that if he didn't do it, he'd always be behind the eight ball, only be 2-year trained, and they want 3-year trained. So he did that at night time, or part time, whatever it was. And then he went on and he did his bachelor's. And then he did his master's all as part-time down at Wollongong. He did his master's degree. Louise was a mature age student. She went to Western Sydney and she did graphic design. See, her marriage broke up. And I said to her, well, you've always wanted to do something else. Now is your opportunity. And she did that. So then Lance, he went to first of all Hawkesbury and then to Australia National University to do science.
So did a lot of the children from the area in the 50s go on to tertiary education, as far as you know?
One of my neighbours, she had 4 children, I think they all had tertiary educations. One of my brother's boys went to Yanko. His boy went to Yanko. Lucille, his daughter, never did anything. Yes, I don't think many did. Not not in the same numbers that they seem to be doing it today.